Yeah, it's like the whole package, because like you're out there, like you like have this experimental study design you've been working forever on, and all the just prep work that comes with like doing a trip like this. But once you're there and everything just comes together, and then you're just like traipsing around in the forest, and it's pretty amazing.
From the University of Washington College of the Environment, this is Field Sound. Mushrooms have had a long and mysterious history in our world. Egyptian hieroglyphs depict mushrooms as gifts from the gods. In the 1970s, penicillin, a life-saving antibiotic, was discovered in a fungus. More recently, video games and TV shows have centered on a fictional zombie fungus infecting humans. We're fascinated by fungi. They're culturally and nutritionally significant, and yet only about 4% of fungal species have been characterized. We still have much to learn. Ann Polyakov is a PhD student in the Quantitative Ecology and Resource Management program at the University of Washington. She's passionate about interdisciplinary research at the intersection of ecology and statistics. Utilizing a variety of modeling techniques to better understand ecological dynamics, her PhD research centers on fungal communities along salmon streams. Recently, she spent a summer with the UW Alaska Salmon Program, studying ecosystems along three streams, collecting data to track the uptake of salmon nutrients beyond the water's edge, and how fungi might play a role in this intricate process.
My advisor, Andrew Bertel, is part of the Alaskan Salmon Program, and he invited me my second year at the University of Washington to come up there and just help him out with stuff. When I was up there, we started talking about these systems and the salmon coming in, and there had been a bunch of researchers that had looked at the effect of these salmon nutrients on plant communities and on the soil, like how the salmon nutrients flow through the soil, but no one had looked at the fungi. And I think it's just because people don't really think about fungi that much. I think they are these days a little more, but yeah. And so we started asking those questions. I looked at the literature and there was practically nothing except this one guy, Alan LaRoque. So I reached out to him, and he was looking at the effect of salmon nutrients on fungi in Canada along the BC coastline. And yeah, and he's like, you should do this in Alaska, and it'll be a great complementary study. So he actually came out with me, and we spent a summer collecting data up there and avoiding grizzly bears and all that stuff.
Sorry, it's like my that, one but... big, like, it's fascination and also just, like, I'm so scared of grizzly bears. I don't know what it is, but, like, I'm obsessed with them, too.
Me too. So. Yeah.
One of the cool parts about being a scientist, for sure, is getting to do that field work and, like you said, kind of feel alive and connect all the dots with your work.
I feel like the fact that you know there's these other predators out there, like, it makes you feel more alive in a lot of ways. Like, your senses just come alive. Like, you're constantly, like, scanning the environment. You're, like, you feel more, like a more fulfilling sensory experience, I guess. And I just, that week in Alaska was just amazing. Like, I still remember it as this, just one of the coolest experiences of my life. So, yeah. Yeah, it's like the whole package, because, like, you're out there, like, you, like, have this experimental study design you've been working forever on, and all the just prep work that comes with, like, doing a trip like this. But once you're there and everything just comes together, and then you're just like traipsing around in the forest, and it's pretty amazing.
I guess for maybe people that listen to this and don't know how it all works, can you talk a little bit about sort of like the ecosystem and how salmon make their way upstream and what that all kind of
totally
maybe describe that?
Yeah, what is it all about? So Pacific salmon, they're born in freshwater streams. And then they make their way out into the ocean, and they stay in the ocean for about 2 to 7 years. And then they come back to the place where they were born, and they mate, and then they die. which is a really crazy life cycle if you think about it. And, you know, there's millions of salmon that do this. And when they return to their freshwater streams, that's a huge influx of nutrients that is basically returned back to these terrestrial systems. And a lot of scientists are interested in the impact of this transfer of resources from the ocean to land, and what impact that has on these communities. And I should mention that another reason why these systems are so cool is because you can trace nutrients from salmon. And that's something you can't do with other like animals that die and decompose. And that's because when the salmon go to the ocean, they pick up this different form of nitrogen there that's stored in their tissue simply because they're in the marine environment. And then when they return, that nitrogen has a different signature than the nitrogen in the terrestrial systems. So basically they have this signature they pick up in the ocean, they bring back, and once they decompose, you can literally trace that nitrogen through as it sort of moves through the system, like as it moves through the soil and as it's uptaken by plants, hopefully by fungi as well.
The Quantitative Ecology and Resource Management Program is a unique interdisciplinary graduate program designed for students interested in applying quantitative tools to ecological and resource management issues. Students receive intensive training in the application of statistical, mathematical, and decision sciences.
So I come from a quantitative background. My original background is in physics, and I just always wanted to do something more tangible that had more application and sort of connection to the real world and to the natural world. And I always like separated the two. Like I'd always be hiking and like doing things outside and then like going to like a lab and doing really abstract physics work. And finally I'm like, wait, I can do both at the same time. And so I literally Googled quantitative ecology program, and this is the first program that came up. And then I looked into it and it was fantastic. A lot of more quantitative research, sort of, to be honest, like plugging in numbers into a model and having it predict a certain relationship, or a lot of it is also working with big data, right? Like when you're collecting data within a certain environment for years, or you have like thousands of data entries or like 20 variables, and there's just no way you can qualitatively make some kind of assessment of that. You can get a really deep understanding of the patterns in how a system works, because the model sort of runs them for you in a way that there's no way you can pick out individual patterns by yourself. So it's not just these models don't just give you an understanding of the relationship as it currently is. You know, once you have a model that describes a relationship between two variables, you can then plug in other variables and the model will predict what that will show you in terms of the relationship. So it gives you an opportunity to predict into the future.
Anne's creating impact with her work to help us better understand the mysterious fungal networks along Alaskan salmon streams and shed more light on ecosystem dynamics.
My big project right now is analyzing the genetics data. So I'm looking at fungal community composition and whether or not there's a unique effect of salmon nutrients on the fungi. So are there fungi uniquely adapted to like eat salmon carcasses, basically? So the genetics data will basically help me parse that out. And what are those fungi? Like, have we ever heard of them before? And then I have this, my other chapter is I'm going to be tracing the salmon nitrogen through the soil, the fungi, and the plants. So I got this data back, isotopic data, that will help me be able to actually trace the salmon nitrogen. Where is it going? Like, are the fungi uptaking the salmon nitrogen? Are they uptaking it in like significant quantities or just like a little bit? And are the mycorrhizal fungi, which are the fungi that partner with plants, are the fungi passing the salmon nitrogen to their plant partners? To some degree, it's still an open question whether specifically salmon nitrogen has some unique benefits. So that's one of my PhD questions, is whether or not salmon nitrogen specifically can alter fungal communities, or if there are fungi that have specifically adapted to consume salmon carcasses. Because if you think about it, these systems have existed for millennia, right? So everything that's in these systems have adapted to these systems. So I think it's not crazy to think that there's these fungi that have eaten these salmon carcasses for millions of years, and they're probably adapted some way to the specific salmon nitrogen and other nutrients found in these fish.
Salmon carcass eating fungi. Yep, you heard that right. They're not plants. They don't produce their own food through photosynthesis. Fungi are important decomposers, especially in the forest. They also create vital nutrients that help an ecosystem's primary producers to flourish. Want to know another fun fact? It's complicated to explain and probably a great topic for another episode, but there's enough evidence to suggest that a mushroom has more in common with you and I than a plant in the forest.
I don't think people, like the general public, necessarily understands like what complex organisms these are and kind of how they operate. And science doesn't sound like it knows a ton either about how they... So can you...
Describe a fungi.
Yeah, like unpack that a little bit. Like how does a fungus eat, you know,
yeah,
a dead salmon? Like what is that? What does that look like?
It's so crazy. Like, because when you... I've been thinking about fungi a lot, and they're so different, so I'm, like, trying to think like a fungi, but there's just no way, because they're so different. It's an entire kingdom, right? Like, there's, like, plants and animals, and I don't think, like, I've talked to people who are, like, fungi are sort of, like, in the plant kingdom, right? I'm like, no, it's a separate kingdom. It's, like, they're their own things. I think a lot of people know fungi as mushrooms, which are the fruiting bodies. So if you think of an apple to an apple tree, that's, like, the mushroom to the fungi. But the main body of the fungi is below ground, and the fungal individuals connect to each other to form these networks. There's also specific types of fungi that partner with plants, and so those also connect to the network. And that's the general idea, is that there's potentially some redistribution. We don't know how it works. They're essentially these like thick mats of white strands that make up an individual, and they're below ground searching for food. And so, you know, if a fungi like stumbles across a patch of nitrogen, let's say, it'll surround it, and it actually digests like outside of its body. Unlike us, right? We digest internally, it digests outside of its body. So it just sucks up the nitrogen. It can also change the form of the nitrogen so it can better consume it. And I should mention that because that's one of the most important roles that fungi perform in ecosystems is... Yeah, without fungi, a lot of the stuff that like dies and accumulates everywhere just wouldn't decompose. So essentially, like their main role in ecosystems is decomposing organic material into inorganic forms, which they can then eat, and like plants can eat, and all the other things can eat, because it's you can't like get the like nitrogen out of organic material, right? You have to like decompose it first, and then you can pull it out. So they're the major decomposers of our world.
So to echo what Anne said, the little mushrooms that pop up in our gardens, our salads, your brother's blacklight posters, those are just the reproductive parts that disperse the spores of a much larger, more complex organism networked beneath the ground surface.
I always think of them as like, how to say it, like chemistry masters, like they're masters of chemistry, basically, like they've had millions of years to evolve this like chemical language and chemical ways to decompose and like basically suck food out of this organic material. So they're pretty good at what they do. And there's such a diversity of ways in which they can decompose organic material and the way that they work. And we've barely, I think, scratched the surface of who these things are and like what they do even. I don't think we have the tools to really understand them yet.
Quantitative science training is unique and intensive. So how do grad students and PhD candidates like Anne make it all work?
You know, plan a study, collect the data, get grant funding, work while you're doing your other work so that you still get an income, like write, publish, and communicate. It's really cool to do all of it, but it's hard, so...
Don't forget sleep.
Right, those things. What's that?
One of those?
Sleeping is important, actually. That's something my body's eventually forced me to do, so...
A fascination and passion for the subject matter, fungi in this case, helps.
There's so many kinds that, like, there's some of them are so tiny. Like, if you're not looking, you'll never see any of these little cute tiny species. I'm really obsessed with the cute tiny species.
What's your favorite kind?
I'm really into Mycenas, which are these extremely tiny mushrooms that just look really standard. Once you get in up close, they have this like perfect little dome cap, and they come in all sorts of different colors too, just crazy colors like blues and pinks and greens. Like, it's all because of their chemistry, right? They're doing different things, they're different colored, or like depends on the soil environment. So, and that's another thing, we've only identified approximately 4 to 8% of all the fungal species out there. So when you're out and about in the forest and you see a mushroom, especially if it's not like a super visible one, it's very likely an unidentified species that no one's ever described or like researched or like ever thought about, probably. They're amazing. They're so crazy. Like, they almost seem out of this world, but they're not. They just come in such different forms. It's ridiculous. Like, there are the polypores, which are those giant like conch ones on the trees. And then there's just like goo fungi. It's just goo. And then there's like your cute little like mushrooms, like, you know, the standard ones. So I don't know. I guess I just want everyone to think about fungi more. And just, you know, if you're out in the woods hiking, or if you're just in any natural environment, there's fungi everywhere. And they're doing all these crazy things. We can't sense it, and we don't really understand it, but it's there. And I feel like once you start thinking about them, you start seeing all the mushrooms everywhere, you start sort of sensing the world a little differently. I just want to encourage people to expand their fungal awareness. We need, like, millions of lifetimes. Everyone just needs to study fungi.
A special thanks to our guest, Anne Polyakov. To learn more about Anne's work, the Quantitative Ecology and Resource Management Program, and the University of Washington College of the Environment, you can click the links in this episode description or visit environment.uw.edu. From all of us at FieldSound, thanks for listening.